Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 224 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, this is essentially a podcast on genetic diseases. But this podcast is going to be focused on chromosomes, especially chromosomes that are relevant and highly tested on the USMLE exams. So we'll just have a bunch of clinical vignettes. We'll talk about the relevant chromosome, make some high yield integrations, and then we'll be on our way. So this should be a relatively short and sweet podcast. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient has like bilateral renal cell carcinomas? Usually it's like the clear cell type. Or they tell you that, oh, this patient has like a mass that you find in the vermis of the cerebellum. So, you know, maybe this person has like ataxia. And then they tell you that, oh, in addition to that, this patient also has like very high hematocrits, right? From like elevated EPO. If you see that, I would really hope you're thinking about VHL, right? Von Hippel-Lindau. Von Hippel-Lindau, right? It's an autosomal dominant disease. The chromosome that's all screwed up in this case is chromosome 3. And again, don't forget your classic associations. Those people tend to have a lot of pancreatic cysts. They tend to have bilateral renal cell carcinomas. They tend to have hemangioblastomas. That's like a brain tumor. It's always in the cerebellum on MBMEs and usually secretes EPO in a paraneoplastic fashion. So those are the big things you want to keep at the back of your mind with VHL. And again, it's a chromosome 3 defect. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and, you know, they'll tell you that, oh, this patient has been acting weird for the last 6 months. She's been having these like neuropsych problems. And let's say she's like in her early 40s. And they tell you that she's been having coriform movements of her upper extremities. I mean, if you see that, what do you want to think about on a test? I hope you're thinking about Huntington's disease, right? I really, really hope you're thinking about Huntington's disease. I remember Huntington's disease, the big classic thing you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams is its association with with atrophy of the caudate nucleus, right? Remember, the chromosome that's all screwed up here is chromosome 4, okay? So chromosome that's all screwed up here is chromosome 4. And remember, it's autosomal dominant inheritance, and it's a trinucleotide repeat disorder, right? In this case, the trinucleotide repeat is CAG, right? It's a CAG trinucleotide repeat. And for the most part, these people have high levels of dopamine. That's what's kind of like screwing them up. And they also have low levels of GABA. That's actually very high yield to know, right? So they tend to have, in fact, the dopamine stuff is not as prominent as the GABA stuff, to be honest with you. The GABA stuff is the thing that usually puts those people in trouble, right? They have like dysfunction, or you can even say like death of neurons that produce GABA, right? So they have like almost no inhibition. They have too much stimulation. So that's a high yield thing to keep in mind. And again, that's a chromosome 4 issue. And remember, right, there are some key things that go with many of these autosomal dominant diseases, especially Huntington's, right? The ones that your friends at the MBME love to test, one is like anticipation, right? Where the disease is showing up like in a big and badder form, or much earlier in life as future generations have the problem. That's anticipation. Another genetic principle you want to keep at the back of your mind is this phenomenon known as variable expressivity. So it just basically means that, oh, that everyone that has the same disease, right, the same like autosomal dominant disease, they don't usually have the exact same kind of symptoms, right? So like, for example, neurofibromatosis type 1, some people can have like the Kaffir or Leigh spots and the neurofibromas. Some may have the leash nodules and the brain tumors. Some may have pheochromocytomas. So, you know, there's kind of like a variation in how the disease is expressed, even if it's the same disease. That's why it's called variable expressivity. And then penetrance is just a measure of how many people having a genetic mutation actually have the disease, right? So, for example, you may be surprised. You may be like, man, I thought this person has this mutation. Is the child of a person that has this autosomal dominant disease? But they have almost no symptoms. If you see that, that's what's known as a penetrance, right? So penetrance just means, oh, you think that 100% of people that have a mutation from like a parent should have a disease, but not all of them do, or they don't have like a severe disease. If you see that, think about like variability in penetrance as well. So Huntington's disease, definitely a chromosome 4 problem. And then if they give you a question about like a child, let's say this child is like really short and this child has like a like very big like frontal bossing, and they tell you that the upper and lower extremities are really tiny, and this child has like lordosis, but they tell you that, oh, this child has like normal intelligence, has a normal lifespan, reproduces just fine. If you see that, you want to think about achondroplasia, right? Remember, achondroplasia, it's an autosomal dominant disease. Basically, these people have screwed up endochondral ossification. So membranous ossification is all they can kind of go with. And it's an autosomal dominant disease, and they have like a gain of function mutation in a receptor called FGFR3, right? So fibroblast growth factor receptor 3, right? It's also a chromosome 4 defect, actually. And then one other thing, I guess, that's a zero chromosome 4, right, is what if they give you a question about a patient? They tell you that, oh, this patient has like bilateral renal masses, and, you know, this patient, I don't know, let's say like they've been treated for a subarachnoid hemorrhage like a few years ago. And they also tell you that, oh, when you listen to the apex, that you can hear like a murmur with a mid-systolic click that gets softer with going from a supine to a, I mean, from a standing to a supine position. If you see that, right, that's pretty easy. That's ADPKD, right? Autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease. I remember the associations I kind of highlighted there. Mitral valve prolapse, right, is a classic finding. That's the murmur I was describing. They can also have like rupture of aneurysms in the circle of Willis, right? That's another thing I was talking about. That's why that's the whole subarachnoid business, right? Worst headache of the patient's life. And then another high yield thing to keep at the back of your mind is those people also tend to have what's the other thing? They have, obviously, they have bilateral polycystic kidneys. But another thing they also have is also they can have like liver cysts. They can have like cysts in the liver. That's something to keep in mind. So those are your chromosome 4 things. And the thing is, at the end of this podcast, I will just kind of like run through these genes again real quick. And then what if they give you a question about a patient, and let's say it's like a 7-month-old child, losing motor milestones, has fasciculations on physical exam. If you see that, what disease are you thinking about? This one's pretty easy, right? This is a spinal muscular atrophy, right? That's the one that we classically call Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. Remember, it's a lower motor neuron disorder, and it's going to happen in kids, usually past the age of 6 months. And remember, it's a mutation in a gene known as the SMN1 gene, right? The survival motor neuron 1 gene. And it's a chromosome 5 problem, right? It's a chromosome 5 problem. That's probably the more common chromosome 5 thing that your friends at the MBME love to test. The other ones they may test is, you know, they may give you a question about a child that has like thousands of polyps in the colon before the age of 20. That's FAP, right? So remember, that's from an APC gene mutation. That's chromosome 5 as well. And then if a child has like a cat-like cry, cradle-shah, that's also another, that's also a chromosome 5 problem. But I'll say the big chromosome 5 thing is spinal muscular atrophy, which again we call Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. It's the anterior horn of the spinal cord that's all screwed up in those people. And then what if they give you a question about a patient, and this patient, you know, let's say it's like a 52-year-old guy, his glucose is high, he's having marital problems because he cannot get his stuff up with his wife. You know, let's say he has like, I don't know, like restrictive or dilated cardiomyopathy, and he has like a ruddy appearance. So RUDDY. I hope you're thinking about hemochromatosis, right? That's actually a chromosome 6 problem. Don't forget, in hemochromatosis, right, your first diagnostic step is to check the ferritin or the transferrin saturation. It will be elevated, right? And remember that the gene mutation is like the HFE gene mutation. Sometimes your friends at the MBME, instead of putting HFE, they may call it like the C2H2Y gene mutation. It's one and the same thing. And you treat those people with phlebotomy, right? That's just a big thing you want to keep in mind. And then what if they give you a question about a child? Let's say she's like 6 years old. She has had like multiple upper respiratory infections. She's like at the second percentile for weight and height. And they tell you that she always has like fatty floating stools, and she has had like 3 bouts of MRSA pneumonia since she was born. If you see that, right, I would really hope you're thinking about cystic fibrosis, right? Cystic fibrosis, remember, it's an autosomal recessive disease. There are many things that can happen to a CF patient, right? They can have like meconium ileus, right? So they don't poop within the first 48 hours of life because they have like thick viscid secretions. They can have like pancreatitis, right? So they can have fat-soluble vitamin deficiencies, so like vitamins A, D, E, and K, because again, because they have like a gunked up pancreatic duct, they're not going to be able to secrete all those pancreatic enzymes. And they can also have they can have like gunked up pancreatic secretion, so they can get fat soluble vitamin deficiencies, they can get fat malabsorption, they get recurring upper respiratory infections. Remember, the most common cause of pneumonia in those folks before 20 is MRSA, but after 20 is Pseudomonas, right? And they can also have like agenesis of the vas deferens, so that can kind of scrub their reproductive potential. These are all high yield things to know for the exam. And don't forget that it's an autosomal recessive disease, and it's from a CFTR gene mutation, right? And remember, it's like the delta F5, I think it's 505 or 502, it's one of those two, just look it up. I'm fairly certain it's the delta, actually it's delta F, it just came to my mind, delta F508 mutation. You can treat it with drugs like ivacaftor, right? Like ivacaftor on exams. That's pretty much all I think I'm going to say with CF. And then another classic, and it's a chromosome 7 problem, again, autosomal recessive inheritance. But if they give you a question about like a child that has like elfin feces, has like a almost like a cocktail party personality, and this child has like, you know, like has a bunch of other problems, you know, like aortic stenosis, where the issue is above the valve itself, versus contrast that with hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, where they have like a subvalvular aortic stenosis. So like they have a problem like above the aortic valve, they have like hypercalcemia, they have elfin feces, intellectual disability. Sometimes on MDMEs, instead of saying like the cocktail party personality, they may say that this person has a loquacious personality. If you see that, think about like a deletion on chromosome 7. That's something that's known as Williams syndrome, right? Elfin feces is probably like the big buzzword you want to remember at the top of your head for exams. That's a chromosome 7 problem. And then what if they give you a question about a child, and this child, has like a lot of like, it can even be a girl, right? The girl uses orthotics because she's been having all these foot problems. She has like pes cavus, has like kyphosis, has to visit the orthopedic surgeon all the time. If you see that, I would hope you're thinking about like Friedreich's ataxia, right? Friedreich's ataxia, that's an autosomal recessive disease, but it's actually a trinucleotide repeat disorder, right? And it's GAA, right? It's a GAA trinucleotide repeat. That's Friedreich's ataxia. That's a chromosome 9 defect. And that's all I think I'm going to say on MBMEs. I mean, another chromosome 9 one is like, they can give you a question about a child that may have like renal angiomyolipomas and cardiac rhabdomyomas and like all these tubers in the brain. And they tell you that, oh, on physical exam, you see all these hypopigmented macules on the skin. Those are your ash leaf spots, right? That's pretty classic for tuberous sclerosis. Remember, tuberous sclerosis has like a super high yield association with a seizure disorder known as a West syndrome. Sometimes people call it like infantile spasms. And obviously for those, right, if you do an EEG on those patients, you'll get the classically described hips arrhythmia, right? And you treat that seizure disorder actually with ACTH, right? It'll be a child with tuberous sclerosis that has a lot of like generalized tonic-clonic seizures, like tons every single day. And usually it'll be a child that's like around a year or less old on an MBM exam. And then what if they give you a question about a child and they tell you that, oh, this child, you know, his blood pressure is a little elevated and his mom noticed that she was bathing him, that he has a flank mass. And then, you know, they tell you that, oh, you decide to get imaging and you see like a non-calcified mass on the flank that does not cross the midline. That's Wilms tumor, right? Remember, Wilms tumor has a lot of associations, right? It's associated with like the WAGR complex, where like they have Wilms tumor, they have aniridia, and they have like GU problems. They have like genitourinary problems, right? Remember, Wilms tumor is also associated with like Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, right? Where they have like hemihypertrophy, so one side of the body is bigger than the other, right? And they have like hepatoblastomas, that's like a red upper quadrant mass. And then they will also have They can have like neonatal seizures from hypoglycemia, because they have like an increase, like hyperplasia, of their pancreatic beta islet cells. Remember, Beckwith Wiedemann is it's an overgrowth syndrome. So whenever you see Wilms tumors, yeah, think about chromosome 11. Typically, the mutation is like in WT1 or like WT2, right? So Wilms tumor, Wilms tumors. And then the other chromosome 11 classic pathology, actually on MBM exams, is this thing where they give you a question and this patient has like, they tell you that, oh, this patient has like, has had like a prolactinoma in their lives, and they have like, they've had like hypercalcemia from primary hyperparathyroidism. And then they tell you that, oh, that they have like one of these pancreatic neuroendocrine thingies, like either like gastrinomas with the Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, or the necrolytic migratory erythema with glucagonomas, or the Whipple's triad with an insulinoma, or the WDHA syndrome. Sometimes it's called like Werner-Morrison syndrome with a vipoma. If you see any of those things, right? You see parathyroid problems, so hypercalcemia essentially, pancreatic problems like the pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, and the pituitary adenomas, usually a prolactinoma. If you see that, that's MEN1, right? Remember, MEN1, autosomal dominant disorder, menin, M-E-N-I-N, gene mutation, right? It's a chromosome 11 problem as well. And remember, it's autosomal dominant inheritance, right? And then, what if they give you a question about a newborn that has like a white reflex instead of a red reflex? And they say, ooh, this newborn is at increased risk of which cancer in the future? This is an RB gene mutation, right? It's retinoblastoma. For the most part, these people, they have high risk of osteosarcoma in the future. Basically, they have like a aberrant transition of the G1 from the G1 to the S phase, even if they have like accumulated mutations. So retinoblastoma is actually a chromosome 13 problem. And again, remember the increased osteosarcoma risk in the future. And I mean, obviously, right, don't forget your Wilson's disease, right? Those people classically on MBM exams, they'll have like Kaiser Fleischer rings in the eye. They'll have Parkinsonian problems because of the copper deposition in the basal ganglia. They will have like neuropsych things. They may act like they have schizophrenia. They may give you like almost like a schizophrenia-like presentation on an MBM exam. And obviously, right, they'll have very low levels of ceruloplasmin in their bloodstream. It's a disorder that's associated with chromosome 13. Remember, those people should not get the Paragard. The copper IUD is contraindicated in those folks. And you can treat it with like trientine or penicillamine, right? But remember, trientine, it's an awesome copper chelator, but it's also an awesome zinc chelator. So they can give you an MBM question where a person has a zinc deficiency from having Wilson's disease, right? And then don't forget, right, like your BRCA2 mutation, which is a sort of like breast cancer, right? That's also a chromosome 13 thing. And then trisomy 13, right? Where you have like cleft lip, cleft palate, rocker bottom feet, holoprosencephaly, bad stuff like that. Trisomy 13 is Bartos syndrome, right? And then if they give you a question about like a boy that is presently to like lock up the fridge because he's like super obese, eats all the time, has intellectual disability, and they tell you that, oh, at birth, this child was hypotonic. You know, you want to think about Bartos syndrome. I mean, sorry, not Bartos, Prader-Willi syndrome. And then the girl counterpart, right? Like where, you know, she has like inappropriate laughter. She has intellectual disability. Like it's called like the happy puppet syndrome. Angelman, that's chromosome 13 as well. I mean, chromosome 15. Why do I keep saying 13? 15. I just finished 13. So chromosome 15. Remember Prader-Willi, right? There's some genetics buzzwords your MBME friends kind of expect you to know. So Prader-Willi, don't forget, right? And Angelman, the examples of like genomic imprinting, right? So what do I mean by that, right? So typically, let's say you're a guy, let's say special gene on chromosome 15, let's call it chromosome, like gene S. Special gene on chromosome 15, gene S, you get it from mom and dad. If you're a guy, you turn off the one from mom and then use the one from dad. Well, if you turn off the one from mom, but dad's gene is mutated, you essentially have no, and the one that's turned off is turned off by genomic imprinting. And let's say dad's gene S on chromosome 15 is all screwed up, right? You won't have any gene product from any parent because mom's gene has been turned off. Dad's gene is mutated, right? That will cause Prader-Willi. Reverse is the case with mom, right? If you're a woman, You get both genesis, one from dad, one from mom. You turn off dads, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? But you don't turn off, you turn off dads with genomic imprinting, but you have moms, right? But mom's gene, if it's mutated, then you have zero gene products. That's the genomic imprinting that will give you enjoyment, right? But another mechanism that your friends at the MBMA love to test is, because think about it, there are two ways you can get Prader-Willi, for example. I've talked about one mechanism, like mom's gene is turned off, which is the normal thing, right? But dad's gene doesn't work because it's mutated. Well, alternatively, you could get both of those gene S's from mom, right? As a guy, right? But the thing is, because you're a guy, both of those genes are turned off, and you're getting both of mom's genes, then both of them will be turned off, right? So it's like you're getting two genes from one parent. So you can't get any gene product because genomic imprinting turns off those two, right? Whenever you get two genes from one parent, right? That's what's known as uniparental disomy, right? Uniparental, one parent, disomy, two genes, one parent, okay? That's very high yield to know for exams. And then don't forget, right, like if they give you a kid with like hyperextensible skin, has had like a widening mediastinum in the past, has restrictive lung disease from like pectus excavatum, has a lens that's dislocated upward and outward, right, has had the worst headache of their lives, think about Marfan's, right? So it's pretty easy. You'll be a person that's like 6 foot whatever tall. I remember Marfan's, right, they tend to have like normal intelligence, it's a fibrillin gene mutation, chromosome 15 is all screwed up, kind of like Prader-Willi and Angelman. They can have mitral valve prolapse, they can have aortic aneurysms, they can have aortic dissection, they can get like a rupture of an aneurysm in the circle of Willis. In fact, that's the most common cause of death in Marfan's. I remember they tend to have normal intelligence, right, on like hyperhomocysteinemia, right, the cystathionine beta synthase gene mutation where they are tall but they have intellectual disability. So you know, just all things to keep in mind with Marfan's. And Marfan's, again, they can have all those pectus anomalies, or they can have like kyphosis, whatever. Those can kind of like make it hard for the lungs to expand, so they can get a restrictive lung disease. But obviously those people have restrictive lung disease with normal DLCO, right, because there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the lungs. And also they'll have restrictive lung disease with a normal AE gradient, because again, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the lungs there, right? So just, you know, high yield stuff to keep in mind. If they give you a question, I've kind of talked about like autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease. I said that's chromosome 4. That's also chromosome 16. Just remember 4 squared is 16. So it's a chromosome 4 and a chromosome 16 problem. It's like, because people that have ADPKD, right, they can have like a PKD1 gene mutation, or they can have a PKD2 gene mutation, right? The PKD1 gene mutation is with chromosome 16. You see the number 16 has a 1 in it. And then PKD2 is a chromosome 4 problem. 2 squared is 4. That's just a nice way to remember it. And then there's this nifty trick I teach people that I tutor. It's just something that kind of screws people over on exams. So let me just give you this trick and it'll basically like permanently solve this problem I'm about to talk about. And then I'll get back on these chromosomes. So glycogen storage disease type 2, right? Pompe's disease. It's a mutation in a... They have a deficiency of an enzyme known as acid maltase, right? Acid maltase is also known as alpha-1-4 glucosidase, right? The thing is, your friends at the MBMA, they actually kind of like that alpha-1 glucosidase thing, because Corey's disease, which is glycogen storage disease type 3, is also associated with an enzyme defect or an enzyme deficiency. But in this case, it's alpha-1-6 glucosidase. I mean, it's the branching enzyme, but usually your friends at the MBMA, they love to put alpha-1-6 glucosidase, right? They love to put that stuff on there. So because they can put like a Pompe's question or Corey's question and then put both answers, alpha-1-4 glucosidase, alpha-1-6 glucosidase. So, you know, some people may say, oh, Divine, how do I remember this, right? Well, there's this trick I teach people like tutor. Pompe's disease is glycogen storage disease type 2, right? GSD type 2. If you double the number 2, what do you get? You get 4, right? Alpha-1-4 glucosidase. Corey's disease is glycogen storage disease type what? 3. If you double the number 3, that's 6, right? Alpha-1-6 glucosidase. That's a perfect way to keep that stuff straight. And I mean, if you want more details on the glycogen storage diseases, I have like a dedicated podcast on it. It was probably one of the earliest podcasts I made on my website. It's probably like podcast 11 or something like that. Just look for it on the website, or you can check the spreadsheet that I have. That should kind of help you out there. And then, what if they give you a question about And I guess technically tuberous sclerosis is also a chromosome 16 problem. Just for completeness sake, tuberous sclerosis is also a chromosome 16 problem. Although remember, tuberous sclerosis is also a chromosome 9 problem, like we have for Friedreich's ataxia. And I mean, in tuberous sclerosis, essentially they'll have like a TSC1 and a TSC2 gene mutation. TSC1 codes for a protein known as hemartin. TSC2 codes for a protein known as tuberin. So if you have like a TSC1 gene mutation, chromosome 9, TSC2 chromosome 16, then you can have tuberous sclerosis. And then, I mean, what if they give you a question about a child that has Caffé Olé spots? Remember, those are hyperpigmented macules on the skin. This child has like Leish nodules in the eye. Remember, those are like iris hematomas. This child has like pheochromocytomas, has sphenoid wing dysplasia. They can have, just many different kinds of problems. Think about NF1, right? Von Recklinghausen's disease, autosomal dominant inheritance, right? It's a chromosome 17 problem. And also like the BRCA1 and the p53 gene mutations, right? Those are all chromosome 17 problems. And then don't forget your trisomies, right? Trisomy 18, rocker bottom feet, right? Overlapping digits. And remember the quad screen results, right? Low AFP, low estriol, low inhibin, right? But like normal. Sorry, so low alpha fetoprotein, low estriol, low beta HCG, but normal inhibin. That's Edwards syndrome, right? Trisomy 18. And then don't forget Down syndrome, right? Trisomy 21. So one's pretty easy. Remember, they can have like duodenal atresia, which is a failure of recanalization. They can have annular pancreas. They can have Hirschsprung's disease. So that can present as meconium ileus. They can get endocardial cushion defects. Those are the most common congenital cardiac anomalies that we find in people with Downs. They can have like early onset Alzheimer's because they have like three copies of the amyloid precursor protein gene. They can have just many, 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 many problems, right? They can get ALL, right? Very early in life. So those are just all things to keep at the back of your mind. Down syndrome is obviously trisomy 21. And don't forget, the most common mechanism behind Down syndrome is maternal non-disjunction, right? In like maybe like 95% of cases. But another thing that could cause Downs is something called a Robertsonian translocation. A Robertsonian translocation, that's like in 2% of cases. I'll probably have like a very high level genetic mechanisms podcast in the future. We explain like all these genetic mechanisms that kind of mess people up on tests. And then what if they give you a question about a patient and this patient has like hypocalcemic seizures as a neonate, has troncocyturiosis or tetralogy of Fallot, has like all these like viral fungal PCP infections. And they have like cleft lip, cleft palate, right? Remember catch 22, right? That's the George syndrome, pretty easy, 22q11. Another chromosome 22 problem, right? If they give you a question about a patient with bilateral acoustic neuromas, sometimes they call it vestibular schwannomas on an NBM exam, that's NF2, right? Remember NF2 chromosome 22. It's one of those neurocutaneous problems. Although NF1 is probably the more neurocutaneous one. And then if they give you a question about a child, that has big ears, big testicles, think about and maybe has like ADHD as like a behavioral psych thing going on. That's Fragile X, right? Fragile X is X-linked dominant, right? Remember, it's a X chromosome problem, right? And then if they give you a question about a child that, after 6 months of age starts getting all these bacterial infections, and they tell you that, oh, the tonsils are basically non-existent in this child, and it's a boy, right? Because this is X-linked recessive inheritance. Think about X-linked A gamma globulinemia, right? Bruton's A gamma globulinemia. Remember, it's a mutation in the BTK gene, Bruton's tyrosine kinase. It's X-linked recessive inheritance, so it'll only be in a girl. I mean, sorry, in a boy. Whoops. In a boy on an NBM exam. It's not going to be in a girl. And they usually start having problems after 6 months of age because the IgG that crosses the placenta from mom while they're in utero, kind of goes away during that period. That's all for Bruton's. And again, they'll have B cell problems. So they can make it like a humoral immunity deficiency question on NBME, or they can make it like a B cell mediated immunity problem. Because basically their B cells don't mature, essentially, right? Or they can make it like antibody-mediated immunity squibble, right? And then what if they give you a question about like a six-foot-old guy, has tiny testicles, so it's having like low reproductive potential, has gynecomastia. If you see that, that's pretty easy, right? That's Klinefelter's, right? Klinefelter, that's XXY. That's kind of like the big thing you want to keep in mind there. So let me give you two sets of lists, right? So let me give you a list that I'm like, okay, this is probably more so for a person that's bound for step 2 CK, like the in terms of the genes they will be testing more. And then I'll give you the more comprehensive list at the end, which is more for like a person that's taking step 1, right? So in terms of step 2 CK, if you want to know your chromosome, so let me just mentally run through this stuff. So chromosome 3, that's VHL, right? That's von Hippel-Lindau. You want to make sure you know that. Chromosome 4, you want to keep that in mind with Huntington's disease and achondroplasia, right? Chromosome 5, you want to think in terms of spinal muscular atrophy, right? Lower motor neuron disorder, Wernicke-Hoffmann disease. Chromosome 6, you want to think about that with hereditary hemochromatosis. Chromosome 7, you want to think about cystic fibrosis, right? And you also want to think about Williams syndrome. Remember the child with elfin feces and the loquacious personality. Chromosome... the next big one, Wilms tumors. Remember chromosome 11, that's high yield to know. Chromosome 13, right? Don't forget like your trisomy 13, that's Bateau syndrome. Chromosome 15 is floridly high yield to know for exam. Remember Prader-Willi syndrome, Angelman syndrome, and Marfan, right? And then chromosome 17, NF1 is definitely a big one to know, and also P53. And then don't forget your 18, right? Trisomy 18, Edwards syndrome, trisomy 21, Down syndrome, and then chromosome 22. Don't forget like the George, third and fourth pharyngeal pouches don't form, right? So thymus, parathyroid is all screwed up. The George is chromosome 22. And then there's one more, NF2 on chromosome 22. So that's like the step 2 CK list. For people that are taking step 1, right, chromosome 3, think about VHL, which I already mentioned. Chromosome 4, don't forget your ADPKD. Don't forget your Huntington's and achondroplasia. Chromosome 5, don't forget spinal muscular atrophy, right? Don't forget APC gene mutations with familial adenomatous polyposis. Don't forget, like, the kid with the cat-like cry, Kredoshaw, right? That's chromosome 5. Chromosome 6 is hemochromatosis. Chromosome 7 is cystic fibrosis and Williams syndrome. Chromosome 9, right? That's Friedreich's ataxia and tuberous sclerosis, especially like the TSC1 gene mutation in TS. And then remember, tuberous sclerosis is hypopigmented macules on the skin. Those are the ash leaf spots. Chromosome 11, right? Don't forget Wilms tumors, right? Don't forget your MEN1 syndrome. That's how you ought to know for exams. Remember parathyroid, pancreas, and pituitary problems. Chromosome 13, don't forget your trisomy 13. That's Bateau syndrome. Don't forget Wilson's disease, right, with Kaiser flasher rings in the eye. Don't forget the retinoblastoma and increased risk of getting osteosarcomas in the future. Don't forget your BRCA2 mutations. And then for chromosome 15, don't forget Prader-Willi, Angelman, and Marfan's. Chromosome 16, that's ADPKD, right, the PKD1 gene mutation. Contrast that with PKD2, which is chromosome 4, right? And then don't forget tuberous sclerosis, but this case is the TSC2. Which codes for tuberin versus TSC1 hemartin, that's chromosome 9. And then for chromosome 17, don't forget NF1, right? Don't forget P53. And don't forget your BRCA1. Remember, BRCA1 is chromosome 17, BRCA2 is chromosome 13. And then Edwards syndrome, right, is your trisomy 18, Down syndrome, trisomy 21. And then your chromosome 22 problems, right? Remember NF2 on chromosome 22. And don't forget your 22q11, your catch-22 problems, right? DeGeorge, right? And then don't forget your X-linked stuff like, you know, like Fragile X, Fragile X, Klinefelter's, X-linked thigamaglobulinemia. So that's the step 1 list. But the step 2 list is much more paired. And, you know, we're just going to leave it at that. So thank you for listening to this podcast. Sorry it kind of became a little longer than I expected. As I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer 1-on-1 tutoring for a ton of exams. Step 1, 2CK, 2CS, step 3. Preclinical med school exams, 30-year shelf exams. If you're a medicine or a peds resident, I offer tutoring for the in-training exams for those specialties and the board exams. And I also offer these booster courses. It's 20 hours across the board for step 1, 2CK, and step 3. Again, people that have done this, they found it to be like super, super, super helpful. And then I also offer like the regular 1-on-1 tutoring, as I've said. I either charge on an hourly rate or you can get a package of like, you know, like 20 20, 40, 80, 160 hours or 120 hours. Just reach out to me for rates on that. And then if you're a med student applying to residency, so like an ERAS application, or a college student applying to med school, so an AMCAS application, reach out to me. I can help with like editing your personal statements, rec letters, mock interviews by specialty. Again, I've worked with people for tons of specialties I had a very successful match season with the people I worked with. And then if you know you have a college buddy that needs tutoring for like gen chem, o-chem, physics, biochem, histology or physiology, just reach out to me. I'll be happy to tutor them. So you can either reach out to me either through Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S at the end at gmail.com, or you can reach out to me through the website divineinterventionpodcast.com. So please subscribe to the WordPress website, subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's called Divine Intervention Podcasts and Videos. Subscribe to the podcast. I have it on Apple Podcasts. I have it on Spotify. I have it on Google Play. And I guess my life lesson for today is the importance of staying humble, right? Regardless of how smart you are, regardless of how killer you are, like, oh, this person always crushes exams and everything, remember to keep a low profile, right? Don't be the one to announce yourself. Let your actions announce you, right? Actions speak a lot better than words, right? Don't sing your own praises. Let other people sing your own praises. That's just a good way to live in general. Because if you're the one singing your own praises, it just doesn't feel right, right? So just be humble. You don't need to blow your horn. There's this common adage in Nigeria that empty barrels make the most noise, right? Like people that don't really have much substance, they're the ones that blow their trumpets on the highest hills, right? You know, just kind of be humble, right? You've seen some people, they're like super, super wealthy, but they are very, very low key, right? Or they are super, super smart, and you don't see them make a Facebook post about how they killed their USMLE exams or whatever. There's nothing wrong with doing that, right? I will let you decide for yourself what humility and what pride means to you. But you know, just keep a low profile, right? You're just protecting yourself. I mean, like, just keep a low profile. You don't have to be, because the thing is, when you're like proud like that, you begin to drum up jealousy in other people, which is wrong from their own perspective. You should admire other people's successes. You shouldn't be jealous of it, right? But you're bringing up jealousy from other people, and then people that just have less than ideal character will then try to find ways to pull you down, right? They will try to find ways to bring you down, right? So when you're proud, right, like people will not, like you won't get favor in the sight of people, right? So just kind of be careful with that. Be humble, because it's a fairly common practice to be proud as a med student, but you know, be humble. The whole world does not need to know about your success, right? They can find out, but let it not be from you. Let's put it that way, right? So I'll just kind of leave it at that. That's kind of like my philosophy on things. Like for me, like I'm not like, I post on Facebook a lot, to be honest with you. But it's not like I get my step one scores or step two scores and I start posting for the whole world to see. No, that's not the world's business. That's my personal business. So, you know, just kind of be humble, keep low-key profile. Because really think, the people that are super, super wealthy in this world, like top of the Forbes list, that kind of deal, you don't hear about them like all the time, right? You hear about the moves they made, not like the people that they saved by supplying AIDS drugs to in Africa or something. Not like them talking about how proud, and you see them when they dress, they don't dress like in the most expensive of fashion. They're pretty low-key, dress like, wear like a t-shirt and like Mark Cuban, for example, right? The owner of the Dallas Mavericks. Pretty low-key, right? He wears denim pants, t-shirts. But that guy is a big-time billionaire. I mean, he pays fines to the NBA all the time, like $500,000. Doesn't even sneeze at it, right? So, you know, just keep a low profile, right? There are people that are a lot more successful than you, that keep a much lower profile than you, that maybe are just rich in the thousands, right? So I think I've kind of like talked about that enough. So I'm just going to go ahead and stop here. So thank you for listening to this podcast. Again, this podcast is Floridly High Yield. I know I'm going to title it the Chromosome Podcast. But there's a lot of like genetic stuff that I talked about. I essentially gave you the classic presentation of like 30 genetic diseases, right, that are very highly and heavily tested on exams. So please listen to this, take detailed notes, go over it multiple times, and you'll be set. And again, if you're a third-year medical student, with all the closures that have been going on, you better make sure you're doing some kind of studying at home for step 2 CK. Because this year, with this application cycle, I'll tell you right now, program directors are going to use the step 2 CK score very avidly, right? They will understand. They'll be like, you couldn't do away rotations. That's understandable. Or, you don't have all your rotations completed. That's understandable. But they'll say, so what? Why do you have a poor step 2 CK score? What were you doing during the pandemic, right? The pandemic may prevent you from doing aways or from doing rotations, but it doesn't prevent you from studying, right? So if you're a third year medical student, I will strongly encourage you because, I mean, no one knows how long this thing will last. But, I mean, now, it's accelerating pretty badly, praying that everything gets better, but you better use this time to study. You better use this time to study. I promise you, it will be time well spent. And work on parts of your application, like your personal statements and stuff that you can complete in this time. Because when everything opens back up, which it will at some point, because this too shall pass, this coronavirus shall pass, right? So when things open back up, trust me, you will wish for the time. Like everything will be scrambling for time, but step 2 CK scores will matter for this application season. That's one big, bold prediction I have. So please, please, please use your time wisely. So thank you for listening to this podcast. I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you. God bless you.